At this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Greg from Frederick area.
Hi, my name is Greg, and I'm an addict. And you know, it's good to be awake at 9 a.m. on a Sunday. Usually I go to the dance and stay until it closes, and I never make it here this early. Had to be here today, though, so I'm grateful for that opportunity. My clean date is December 31st, 2008. I currently live in Hagerstown, Maryland. I'm a relatively new resident of there. I kind of got clean in the Dulles Corridor area and the Norvana area, and then continued and moved to Rock Creek, also some influences there. Went down to the Tri-County area, Southern Maryland. I'm like a nomad. It's crazy, but it helps me recognize more people when I'm at a convention, so it does have its plus sides. You know, the topic today is searching for spiritual relief. And when I was originally asked to do a different workshop, and then I was asked to do this one. And when I was asked to do this one, I thought, no way. No way that this is the new topic that was handed to me, because this is exactly what I have been doing a little more desperately than usual in my life, you know, and it has to do with the fact that, you know, I've undergone one of the major changes and stressors in life, which was I relocated, you know, to a rural community in the mountains. You know, I'm from Miami, you know. Our mountain is called Mount Trashmore. It's a landfill, okay? So I'm not used to, you know, mountain people. I'm getting used to it, you know, slowly but surely, you know, we adapt. And I'm in a new career. In 2007, when I was in my fifth inpatient treatment center, I'm not counting all the outpatient ones, you know, my counselor and I talked about what kind of dream was stolen from me, or what kind of dream would I like to recapture that I didn't think was possible. And, you know, I said, well, to become a lawyer, you know. And, you know, as someone who has spoken to judges before, every month, and been commended for my clean urines, and for my good participation in treatment, wasn't precisely sure that was the right career for me. But you know, the growth and the possibilities in this way of life are limitless. And I became a lawyer. You know, I was sworn in December 5th. And addicts in narcotics. Addicts in Narcotics Anonymous are what made that possible. And I don't just mean you all, the addicts who were in meetings, keeping me sane, keeping me centered, keeping me spiritual, but I mean addicts who are judges and who are lawyers and who looked out for me and who wrote letters for me and who testified for me in front of people and told them, yes, this man is more than qualified to become a lawyer, so quit the bullshit and swear him in, you know. So it's a process, and I spend every day defending addicts. And most of my clients are indigent, because I'm a public defender, and they stress me the hell out, man, because they're just like me. You know, they are screwed up. They are crazy. They're like, I want a trial, man. It's a trial. So I prepare for the trial, and then they're like, no, man, I need a plea. I need a plea. And then I give them the plea, and they're like, you misled me. I want an appeal. And I'm like, God damn. You're lucky you're as crazy as I am, and I'm just going to roll there with you, you know. But I need nurturing in my spirit because this drains me. And every day I'm learning and reading and learning and reading and thinking, you know. And so I need to replenish my spirit. And there are various ways I do that. There are various ways I obtain relief. First and foremost is prayer. Now look, I do struggle with how does my message reach everyone? Because in NA, I have befriended and loved and been loved by atheists. And as well as, you know, Jesus freaks, you know, that love Jesus so much, they actually talk about him in an inappropriate way in a meeting, you know. And there's all kinds, you know. And so I was raised Roman Catholic, you know, and that God and me had some issues because that God punished me and judged me and made me guilty from everything to like looking at a Playboy to rubbing one out to everything I did. Everything I did that came natural to me, I had to feel guilty about it afterward. You know, and it was a tough life, man, you know. Thank God for Monsignor Riley, this old Irish priest who told me, I know when you look at the pretty girls, you get excited and you want to do things, but just don't do it too much, you know. It's like, God bless you, man, because I need to do this. So, you know, what can I say? And my problem is I threw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, I didn't think there's different kinds of God. The concept of a God of my understanding, a higher power that could be loving and caring and that's it, as long as it's not me, as long as it's greater than me, unknown to me, foreign concept. So I just took the whole God thing and threw it out because my theory was if this worked, why am I a raging addict? You know, why am I 4 days running around in alleyways looking down? I've got like a woman's skirt on and no shirt, you know, and I'm just like, you know, I'm not at a Fish concert. Something is very wrong here. The Grateful Dead are nowhere to be found. Bootsy and P-Funk are not around. I should not be dressed like this. So it's a problem, you know. Active addiction really it did a number on me, and it's just and you know, and it wasn't all that was that kind of stuff is funny, but you know, some things are not so funny, like me stealing my grandfather's car and driving away, and he's, you know, an old school Cuban guy, you know, he grabbed onto that car like, you ain't taking my damn car, and I dragged him down the street a ways before he finally let go, you know, and when I looked in that rearview mirror and I saw my grandfather on the street on the floor, and I knew that I did that to him because I had to get another one, and I did not care what I had to do to get that other one. I felt terrible. And that just fueled my addiction more because I had to now do more to get over the guilt first and then get high, you know. And it was just a horrible way to live, and I could not stop, you know. But somewhere inside of me, my spirituality was alive, and I did pray, you know, because I was just raised with it. That's all. No other reason, you know. It was just put in me. And so I knew that when things got really, really bad, I could pray, you know. And I was led to treatment, and I was led to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And at first, I rejected this program because I saw the word God everywhere. Everywhere in that basic text. And I could not process the contradictions. Like, how are you not religious, but you have chosen a Judeo-Christian name for a deity and just put that thing everywhere, you know? It's like, I'm sorry, I'm just like, maybe I've done a lot of schooling and I've read a lot of books, so I analyze things a little too much, you know, and I had a hard time with things that don't click, You know, and by focusing on that little piece of bark on the tree, I missed the forest. You know, the forest full of hippies who were loving me. You know, who were loving me when I couldn't love myself, who listened to me and tolerated me when I was an insane newcomer and just insisted on sharing at every meeting, you know. Because they need to hear from me, man. I got stuff to say. And they just tolerated me, you know, basically. And, you know, throughout my journey in trying to find spiritual relief, I have picked up things from different faith traditions. You know, I spent 4 days in a Zen Buddhist monastery in the Catskill Mountains of New York, you know. And, you know, I'm a real addict. So, you know, I do something, and right away, I go up to, you know, I don't remember his name, the guru, you know, the sensei or whatever, right, that we all had to, like, kind of meditate in line waiting to see him, you know. And I was already like, you know, I'm thinking about the month-long program. I think maybe I need to live here, you know. And he's like, why don't you just try meditating at home first? And if you actually do that, come back and see us. You know. So thank God for that. Because I still got my hair, you know. I don't need to shave it. I don't, you know, need to wear a robe every day and be cold because we can't turn the heater on. Can't flush the toilet, you know. So, but at any rate, what that experience gave me is it gave me my first taste of quieting my mind, of just learning to, and in fact, I mean, I don't know what's appropriate or what's not appropriate. I would like to actually take 30 seconds of my time here, and if we could, I would like to just breathe with you all for a little bit. And you're going to hear coughs. You're going to see the light of a cell phone in the side of your peripheral vision. You're going to hear a door. You're going to hear talking, blah, blah, blah. You know, somebody's stomach going all glug, glug, glug. You know, whatever I hear, I'm going to accept it and just let it go. And whatever thought comes through my mind, I'm going to notice it and let it go. I'm thinking, okay. And what I'm going to follow is my breath. I'm just going to breathe normally, you know, and just follow the sensation of that breath. So if you, and you don't have to do this, just do whatever you want. But, you know, I think we should, I would like for us to just take a little moment and just kind of breathe together for a little bit. Thank you. Thank you for that. And you know, when I am at a meeting and there's a moment of silence because no one's feeling the spirit to share at this second, I love it. And I could sit there for half an hour with everyone because I love sitting with people I love. And by that I mean you all, because you get me, you know me, you've been where I've been, and I'm comfortable with you. And so when I sit with you, I don't have to talk. I can breathe with you. I can just relax. And you know, it's funny because I'm sure you've experienced this. There's always someone who says, oh, I can't stand the quiet. My name is whatever, and I'm an addict. And you know, if I'm in a spiritual mood, I smile and I think, oh, I used to be that way, you know. If I'm in a condescending mood, I just think, oh, you poor restless slob. Could you drink 10 cups of coffee instead of 15? breathe for a second. For all of us. For our, don't do it for you, do it for me. But you know, that's life, you know, and I've gone to meditation meetings, and I used to get upset every time someone came in late, or a door slammed, or a phone chirped, or whatever, and I learned to just smile when that happens. It's just life happening. It didn't ruin your meditation. Just keep breathing, you know. And I just read an addict who lives in Hawaii who put in his status, you know, a little bit today about mindfulness meditation. And I was like, how amazing, you know, that like we are such a fellowship that people who live so far away from me can write a book and help me through my 11th step and help me seek spiritual relief. And I've never even met this guy in person, and we're Facebook friends. And you know, he enriches my practice. I have an eclectic practice. You know, I call my higher power God because it's comfortable, because it's easy. And you know, if you went to my house, maybe you think I'm a crazy person, because I have like a wooden crucifix from Guatemala made out of like wood that has like an abstract kind of Jesus on it, and I have it over my bed, you know. But then we have a meditation room in our townhome that we rent, and I got my wife, when I was first in recovery, I used to joke to my wife like, well, when we get out of this little shitty one bedroom apartment inside the Beltway that was built in World War II, that has lead paint that I was warned not to lick when I signed my lease. It's like, thank you for that warning, because lead paint is so delicious. I can't even help myself sometimes, but now I'm committed. I signed a legal agreement. Oh, sound guy's pissed. Didn't mean to bang on the podium, sound guy. But years later, we rent a bigger home because we live in the boonies and we can do that, you know, and we have a meditation room. And my wife went there with me. God bless her. You know, she's not in the program, but she made a little altar to the Buddha and she put elephants. We have yoga mats. We have a meditation chairs, you know, because we're both kind of big and we don't like to cross our legs like a lotus flower because we have no damn circulation and it hurts and it's uncomfortable. So we have a fat people meditation cushion. It works. Try it. For lazy people, your spine will be aligned. Just sit. And you know, and we have that today. And I just walk in that room and it's like moment of Zen. You know, like the world is all right, you know, and I'm all right. And everything is as it should be, you know. And I pray every single day. I pray in the same spot on my bed because I read something somewhere about if you pray in a particular spot, you create a spiritual energy in that area, and the more you do it, the stronger that energy and that communication becomes. So I pray constantly, and my favorite prayer is the third step prayer. Take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live, you know. And I don't worry today. You know, sometimes I talk to God in Spanish because I'm half Cuban. And I say, Diosito lindo, ayúdame, por favor. You know, and it just comes out. And that's okay, you know. And if I think about it, I just call them something like beautiful little God or whatever. If you translate that directly, that's kind of weird. Whatever. It feels great. And sometimes it's Jesus and sometimes it's God. And sometimes I talk about it as the universe, you know, the universe has sent me this, the universe has put this in my life. And I try not to judge myself. I try not to say I'm doing it wrong. I'm doing my spirituality wrong. I pray how I want to pray. And I don't ask for specific things. I ask for peace, and I ask for strength, and I ask for guidance, because I don't know what I need. I'm basically retarded. I mean, I will drive down the street and think, I want a nice vegetarian meal with vegetables that are minimally cooked, that are organic and healthy. Ooh, McDonald's. I'm retarded. You know? I have a beautiful, loving wife who was with me through my active addiction. No one should be with anyone that's pawned their shit. And I pawned her stuff all the time. And she forgave me for that, you know? And, you know, now she's working on her issues, and it's my turn to be patient and give her space to heal herself. And, of course, I'm selfish. So I just walk down the street and I see, you know, a beautiful young anything, you know, just any young woman who's not my wife, you know, and has got a couple teeth in her mouth, you know. Not more than a few kids, you know. And I'm just like, looks pretty good. I gotta have that, you know. And I don't really want that, you know, but I'm just a human mammal that has all these desires, and they just come and go and come and go. And I learn to seek for my... Did you put that closer to me? Okay. I learn that the only unlimited source of spiritual relief for me are the things that can't be bought, and that don't involve, you know, bodily functions and like sex and gambling and shopping. It is prayer. It is talking to my higher power and asking him to guide me and give me strength. It is praying with you all. It is going to meetings regularly. It's helping the newcomer when he wants a ride, and I do not want to give him a ride, but I give him a ride. You know, it is working steps with my sponsees. You know, it is calling my sponsor more often than I would like to, but he wants me to, so I follow suggestions today. And I just go to, you know, I follow the suggestions. I go to the literature. I go to meditation. I go to prayer to the best of my ability. And it just works, man. It just works. And thank you all for just helping me recover and giving me my spiritual relief. God bless.